Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Another episode of Unfiltered. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, and sitting in for the absent but always missed Aaron Fitzpatrick is another regular to this show, Mr. Justin Roerlich.
Hello.
So how you doing, Justin?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Did you know that today is National Peanut Butter Day?
Wow. I mean, you know, we're right in there. I like it. Yeah, I did not know it was National Peanut Butter Day, but is there a parade?
No, but there should be. Today, the 24th, is National Peanut Butter Day, according to the National Peanut Board. March is National Peanut Month. March 1st is National Peanut Butter Lovers Day, which is different than National Peanut Butter Day.
So we're about two months ahead of time, though.
Well, January 24th is National Peanut Butter Day.
Oh, okay.
I'm just helping people prepare for... It's March 8th is National Peanut Cluster Day. April 2nd is National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day. June 12th, National Peanut Butter Cookie Day. September 13th, National Peanut Day. November, National Peanut Butter Lovers Month. November 20th, National Peanut Butter Fudge Day.
Oh, my God. Peanut Butter Fudge. Go back to the clusters, because that seems like it's coming up soon. I mean,
that's March 8th. March 8th.
March 8th is a cluster day.
National Peanut Cluster Day.
All right, so is that not going to be a chocolate thing, or is it got to be all caramel-based peanut?
Well, you know, when it comes to National Peanut Cluster, Butter, Jelly, Snack Day,
All bets are off. It's all just...
That's right.
So what is does the peanut board... it's funny that... The only thing that I think about lately when it comes to peanut butter is how much in news and how much I've heard that people have peanut allergies, and how peanut allergies, like when I was a kid, no one was allergic to really anything. I guess it's probably mostly undiagnosed. But you know, now it's it comes across as like everyone's got a peanut allergy. Everyone that you know is allergic to peanuts, and like they have like anaphylactic shock or something. But I mean, did you remember anyone being allergic to peanuts when you grew up?
I don't know. It must be a real thing, because they don't serve them on airplanes, and there's peanut free schools and this and that. But
before American Airlines was the worst I'm going to get such hate mail now. Before American Airlines was the worst airline in America, they, in their business class, used to have warm nuts in a little, you know, porcelain dish that they would hand you, like the warm towel, the warm nuts, and all you could drink booze. That was the only thing they had going for them in business class on American. Now the nuts are gone. You know, there's no opening snack, opening condiment. I mean, maybe the little peanut thing. I mean, the pretzel thing, but that's hardly a warm nut.
Times are hard for the 1%, I guess. Business classes isn't like it used to be.
I haven't flown business class in over a decade, but no, it's interesting to know. So the peanut board, they address the peanut allergy issue, or I mean, is it, or am I just the only one that thinks that there's a lot of peanut allergies?
I'm sure that they've addressed it. So I mean, this isn't something that I can speak with any authority whatsoever on. But what I can, if you just want to backtrack for a second about food on airplanes. American Airlines, the famous story, you might remember that American Airlines saved $1 million a year by taking one olive out of their first class salads.
Is that true?
Yeah. So whatever percent, you know, whatever fraction of a penny that olive cost, you know, given the
that's amazing. That reminds me of a good Simpsons episode where there was a, you know, Homer Simpson, for whatever reason, I think he took some hair tonic, and he started growing hair back. And so Mr. Burns believed that he was a young up-and-comer and like a go-getter. I think the actual words were go-getter. And that he wanted to start, you know, listening to Homer's opinion about, you know, the things in the workplace. So one of Homer's ideas was essentially to that he was complaining there wasn't enough tartar sauce in the fish on Friday. So he's like, you know, we want more tartar sauce. And when the famous line from Mr. Burns is, you know, after he's been nickel and diming the business, he says, you know, let them have their tartar sauce. And so Smithers runs out and all of a sudden they were giving everyone like huge spoonfuls of tartar sauce. And Homer had a moral and emotional victory over corporate management. Speaking of
tartar sauce and Homer Simpson-esque eating, what do you think about the whole Paula Deen issue right now? I mean, didn't Anthony Bourdain for years kept saying things like, she can't do this. She can't convince people to eat like this. If you eat like this, you're going to die.
Well, I mean,
and then she comes out, but now I saw a quote from him the other day saying, you know, she knew about this for 2 years and she still was frying Twinkies and whatever else.
There's two stories. I mean, yes, she is the poster child for that now. So she owns that territory. But in the same regard, it's like, you know, people who eat like that every day, you know that the end is coming. So you basically have made a decision that you're going to enjoy your life while you're living it, right? So I can't fault her for that. And I think her show is wildly successful. In fact, you know, a good friend of this show, Jonathan Russo, who's a friend of mine, also happens to be Paula Deen's agent. So, you know, obviously the franchise, her franchise is, you know, what people wouldn't believe, but it's like a $1 billion franchise. Her sons have done quite well, and she's licensed her name out to everything from spice grinders to, you know, soups and recipes that carry her name.
And now the diabetes drug, I don't remember the name, but she's she's going to be the spokeswoman for, I don't remember what brand name it is.
But it makes complete sense that someone that, you know, is stricken by, you know, a disease or has an accident now becomes a spokesperson for that cause. And so for Paul, I mean, people could say, well, you know, but no one meant that you were supposed to eat this way every day. You know, but if you think of Paula Deen recipe for a holiday, I mean, it's probably delicious. It's got butter, butter and salt, and you know, Crisco in it. It's delicious, but
just eat less of it than she did,
right? Exactly, and less often. So it's not to say that whatever Paula stood for was bad. I mean, she was an amazing lady and is an amazing lady, and she has some incredible recipes that I think that will live the test of time. But it's kind of like when they updated the Irma, what's the Joy of Cooking, and they in the children of the writer came back and like re-updated and modernized the cookbook to be more heart friendly. Like they had written it in the '50s and they updated it in the '70s and then they re-updated it again in the '90s because the cookbook was just out of time. Like you couldn't add 2 sticks of butter to something and still, you know,
right.
But in any case, what else you got for me over there?
Well, as long as we're on the subject of fried Twinkies, Paula Deen, I'm sure that you are you've been following intently the Hostess Chapter 11 filing. Forget about Kodak; no one cares about film anymore. But what happens if your Twinkies disappear?
Well, I mean, the problem is they have a shelf life of like 900 years.
So basically hoard them now. And
right, because you buy them, they'd be good forever. But also, if they sat on a shelf, there was no rush to or urgency to buy them because you knew they'd be there next week, you know, and they'd be good.
That's a good point. I wonder what the actual shelf life of the Twinkie is.
I think it's multiple years. I think it's multiple years. I don't think it's like a 6 month thing. I think there's a freshness dating on it. But honestly, if you had a Twinkie. That's something we could probably look up.
Which I will.
Excellent.
But in fact, Twinkies are not going to disappear. It's because it's a Chapter 11 filing, so they're going to reorganize, restructure, and we still will have Twinkies.
Now, is this a classic example of like a, you know, a big company that led by someone like Mitt Romney, who Bain Capital came in and reorganized Hostess, and now Hostess is filing for Chapter 11. Or is it, this is just a mismanagement? I mean, how does Hostess, a company that's been making products for, you know, 100 years, how do they go Chapter 11? What are they doing wrong?
I don't know.
Or they're not in touch with what people want?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know what the history of this is, and how they ended up here.
But you know they filed.
They filed last week, and, you know, they'll still be around. They're just not in good shape. Don't invest in the company. But yesterday, I mean, on the more Twinkie news, yesterday, Takeru Kobayashi, the hot dog eating or former hot dog eating champ, unseated by Joey Chestnut last year, but he ate he set a Twinkie eating record yesterday on the Wendy Williams show. 14 Twinkies in a minute.
Oh my God!
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot.
I mean, just think about the saturated fat in 14 Twinkies. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like that's like doing an 8-ball. A Twinkie.
No.
I don't even know what I'm saying. but the good news is that he survived, right?
He survived.
And the record was 13, or he set the new record?
You know, I'm not sure that there was a record, but that's something that we can look up as well.
I think we should have a competition right out here at Roberta's. I can do a butterscotch crimpet eating contest because I think I could. But you know what? I'm getting a signal from Jack that we got to go to a commercial. But when we get back, we'll discuss more Twinkies and other things. Take care. So welcome back, everyone, to Unfiltered. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, with my co-host today, Mr. Justin Roerlich. And I want to apologize for the late start, guys. I know most of you probably listen to this on iTunes, so it doesn't really matter to you. But we pride ourselves on our promptness here at Roberta's. And, you know, I got stuck in a beer traffic jam. There was two beer trucks blocking the way, so I couldn't really get to Roberta's on time for this live broadcast. But we're here now, and we happen to be drinking Tall Boys right now, and but we're discussing Twinkies. So Justin, remind me about didn't you just judge the Nathan's hot dog eating contest? Weren't you in the press corps for this?
Oh, I was in the press corps. I was not a judge, but I went to the I not only went to the competition this year, but I was also at the weigh-in the day before. Down by City Hall, Mayor Bloomberg was there. I'm serious. and I did get to interview the world's top eaters. It was very exciting. I interviewed Eater X, Tim Janis. I interviewed Joey Chestnut, who is the 2-time defending champion. Hey, this is a red letter day. This was an exciting opportunity.
So what is the general? How do these guys approach this type of exercise in terms of like stretching their stomachs out or not eating or eating and stretching it? And I don't know.
Well, a tremendous amount of athleticism involved. You know, these are world class athletes. This is not just eating as fast as you can. This is there's a lot of skill. There's a lot of training. You know, these are people that you know, that had a dream and pursued it.
Well, I mean, the way that I've seen some of these guys are like cobras, the way they detach their jaw to like move and they move it all and they wet it down and they jam it. So how did he eat the Twinkies, just straight, or did he actually have a method?
You know, I didn't watch the Twinkie eating yesterday, but I know that Kobayashi's method is his technique is he dunks the hot dog bun with the dog into a cup of water before he eats it, so he gets some of the mass
right,
condenses some of the mass. I would imagine he did a similar thing with the Twinkies.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, the only thing that I fear is that like Wendy Williams' hair, the Twinkies would catch fire from the stage lighting. So, like, you know, you'd be very careful over there at a studio, you know, especially at a...
He's a professional.
He's a professional. He knows not to put the Twinkie near the light.
Yeah.
So, any other hot topics on the radar this week? I mean, we got to talk a little bit about wine, but, you know, you're my China guy. What's going on in Chinese wine?
I don't know if there's any new news that I've come across as far as Chinese wine, but I did, and we talked about this the other day a little bit. An interesting wine producer who prints his labels in Braille.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I mean, you read an article. There's Chaputier in the Northern Rhone has been for years producing. You know, his wine labels are obviously, you know, they're in color, but they also have a Braille element, and it's you know, it's at this point considered stylized or just iconic. And but you had mentioned to me, did I know anyone that was doing that? Because you apparently ran across a Playboy magazine that was all in Braille.
Yep.
And then you ran across some wine labels in China that were coming out in Braille. We're not China.
They weren't Chinese, no. But there was a label. I saw the Chaputier, and then there's a label that's all in Braille that seemed like more of a sort of a style gimmick to me than the but. Yeah, no, the Braille Playboy. I have a copy of it coming in the next couple of days.
I'm really curious to see how you become titillated by a Braille copy. I mean, but anyway, would anyone know if it was a Playboy? Only a blind person would know. I mean,
right. Right. There are obviously no photographs.
Right.
But I'm interested to see, and I'll have to find somebody who reads Braille to tell me, but I'm interested in finding out if they describe the pictures or if they just leave them out. I have no idea, because it's all, there's no visual element to it whatsoever. So it should be interesting.
So what we'll do is that day, next time you come on, I want you to bring the Braille Playboy to the studio.
You'll bring a Braille bottle of wine.
I'll bring a Braille bottle of wine, and then we'll see if literally see if we've been missing anything.
Perfect.
And well, hey, this is you know, obviously a shorter show than I would have thought, but you know, I've got a couple of quick housekeeping things to give a shout out for. March 13th, Barter House is going to be doing a portfolio show, a trade show for the trade only, and some key guests of our friends and family and restaurant group. And it's going to be in Manhattan. And next show we'll give you all the details. But save the date is March 13th for the Gotham Wine Group portfolio show and Barter House. I wanted to give a shout out to my girls on the East End of Long Island, the Fork and Anchor ladies. And that would be Miss Erin Fitzpatrick and Miss Lucy Liu. And they're doing a good job out there. And from the sounds of it, they're going to make it through the winter with strong business and lots of love and lots of laughs out there. So,
and hello to Marie at Amagansett Aquaculture.
Yes. Yes, Marie. We love you. And I thank you. I remember the 7-pound lobster that you gave me on my 40th birthday. So that will always go down in history of how do you cook that thing. But all right, but this is probably going to wrap up our show here today on Unfiltered, and welcome back next week. We'll have some surprise guests in the studio. Take care, guys. Sign off.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network.
You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.